Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Spencer, could be a Spider-Man, but Sony hasn't decided on the name yet, Williams?
Yes, I knew you were going to say that before you even said it.
Ah, there you go, he's got a little Madam Web in him. And also with us is intern slash part-timer slash stenographer slash red shirt Amy.
Red shirt? It's not even... I was waiting for thwip-thwip, but thanks. That's rude.
Spider-Man wore a red shirt.
Thwip-thwip?
Thwip-thwip. There you go. And speaking of thwip-thwip, we are talking about the aforementioned Sony film that debuted this past week, and that is Madam Web.
I mean, I'd already like to debate if it's a film.
The amalgam of clips that we watched. Stick around, as obviously we're going to dive into our thoughts on this movie and the web of lies that the trailer brought forth, resulting in us having to see this movie.
I'm just going
to
be laughing this whole review. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Well, before you laugh, why don't you, Spencer, give us them opening credits?
Tune in to brand new episode each and every week. Now at all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101 and also threads something.
That's right. Check us out over our website at filmlosophers.com. There we got allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, good Marvel movies, and everything else in between. Check us out there at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming. And that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Look for us there at The Filmlosophers. Give us a follow or subscribe and listen in. Tell us how we're doing. If you think we're doing a great job, give us a 5-star review because we've earned that.
We have.
Especially after this review. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Are you okay over there?
No, but yes.
Amy's got a little trauma over there, so we'll give you the rest of the social links at the end of the episode. Interestingly enough, yeah, we're going to be talking about the apparently interesting movie coming out of Sony that we just saw. But before we do, Spencer actually brought to the table something very interesting. So obviously, with the hype of the last year's movies and all the best ones that came out, obviously it's going to bring about some memories from films, especially the nostalgia or the historical facts of, you know, some of the films that are based on, whether if it's, you know, Oppenheimer and the, you know, the creation of the atomic bomb, or that of Barbie, which Spencer brought up a very interesting note about the Barbie Girl song.
Oh.
This is perfectly timed because I wasn't allowed to listen to it all the way through, but it started off very aggressive.
Spencer, why don't you tell us a little bit about why or how you remembered this song?
Just traveling down memory lane. It was because we were playing Toxic earlier, and that caused my brain to think about the weird Toxic Faint mashup that someone made on the internet ages ago.
Uh-huh.
And then because that was like a traveling song with my weird group of friends at the time.
Uh-huh.
We also had the German version of Barbie Girl in our playlist.
Ooh.
And if you have not heard it, I would just give it a quick listen because the man in that song sounds so stereotypically aggressively German that I just don't know like what is happening for this man in the song.
So where did, like, was it just something that just stumbled onto your, you know, playlist, or was it something that somebody showed you?
I actually don't know because this was pre-Spotify, so I have no idea how I even clipped into this.
LimeWire.
I was not a LimeWire man.
You were the person that just burned it. You would get the copies of the
burns. This file fell into my hand.
It happened to come upon my PC and now I must download it. Are you gonna play it?
Wie denk je wel wie je bent?
Ik heet Moppie, ik ben lekker man.
Did he just rough it?
Yes.
What is it that we're listening to, Spencer?
This is Barbie Girl in German.
Wait for
right here.
Okay, that's
the
that's
best
doing
part.
That's
the best part of that song comes near the end, where like,
where what?
I want to. Can you find it? Because it should be right after that.
This is what we're doing right now on the podcast.
Not right after that.
He sounds very angry.
Yeah.
There's German is not spoken gently ever.
No. And like,
but
this song
is even harder. I don't know.
No, it's after this. It's near the end because he just goes into.
He's got like 6 seconds.
Okay. Because it's after that. Because at a certain point, he just goes into what I can only call a song tirade. Because, like, he's just like, and I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Is that why you yell so much? Because you were inspired by the German version of Barbie Girl?
Maybe.
What?
Hey, don't ask questions when you're not expecting the answer.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I've really experienced a lot of like foreign language interpretations of like really popular songs. That probably
yeah,
being the most interesting
I
one.
I agree with that. This is the most interesting foreign song I know.
No, I'm saying I don't come across a lot of like foreign language versions of pop songs.
Yes.
Especially American ones.
Yes.
Yeah, actually, yeah.
Well, that was an interesting wake-up call for music.
Yeah, for
plays.
Anybody who was listening to this episode, it was a lot of angriness. Spencer, is this why you're always angry? Because you listen to that song too much all the time?
Again, maybe.
There you go.
I'm working it out now.
Hey, therapy on the air. There you go. Just call me Fraser Crane.
No.
No, thank you.
Yes.
Sorry, Stinky Pete. Nope.
Yes, you are.
Hey!
No, that was just, that was really weird that you brought that up out of nowhere. And the fact that like you guys actually devolved from talking about the show before we went on air to actually listening and going on about this song. So I think it just needed to be brought up.
We couldn't play the mashup of Toxic and Faint. Like we had to play the German Barbie Carol.
I'm sorry. That just seemed more interesting than the...
Something you would actually like, got it.
I mean, like, it's sometimes funner to listen to something you don't like.
It's true. Especially for the people
sitting. Why are
you
touching other people's mics? Leave the mics alone.
Because
we're on the air.
Why
are you touching? So, look then.
What do you want from me?
Why do you want from me?
Why do you want from me?
Why do you want? Okay, Drax. Speaking of discombobulated statements. Did you just literally say, why do you want from me?
Yes.
Well, now I wish we would have picked that song for this. Because we are now transitioning over into our conversation of the evening. And that is...
So sorry.
My God.
We can't keep a straight face with this.
Sony's Madam Web.
Sorry.
Yeah, this song was in the movie. Yeah, we got a chance to check out this movie, and needless to say, we kind of have some things to talk about. So before we continue forward, Spencer, why don't you give us that official synopsis goodness?
Cassandra Webb is a New York metropolis paramedic, debatable, who begins to demonstrate signs of clairvoyance. Forced to challenge revelations about her past, she needs to safeguard three young women from a deadly adversary who wants them destroyed.
Yep. Directed by S.J. Clarkson in her feature-length directorial debut.
The more I learn about this movie, the more upset I get.
The film stars Dakota Johnson in the title role alongside Sydney Sweeney, Celeste O'Connor, Isabella Merced, Tahar Rahm, Mike Epps, Emma Roberts, and Adam Scott. A couple of pieces of information. This movie grossed only $15.4 million domestically in its open weekend.
Woo!
The sixth lowest of any Marvel film, which if we go back and look at the numbers, that would be Punisher Warzone from 2008 only received 4.3. Howard the Duck in 1986 received 5.1.
Is that adjusted for inflation or no?
Probably
no.
Probably not.
No. Which, maybe that might actually be a lot more. The New Mutants in 2020 for $7 million. Elektra in 2005 for $12.8 million. And 2004's The Punisher for $14 million. So, yeah. are you right over there, Ames?
We're just vibing to Britney Spears and the glory that is the song.
According to Dakota Johnson in an interview with The Wrap, the screenplay underwent extensive rewrites, saying, quote, "There were drastic changes, and I can't even tell you what they were," end quote. The original screenplay, which was described as darker and, quote, "very Terminator-inspired," end quote, would have seen Madame Web and the Spider-Women trying to protect a pregnant Mary Parker from a time-traveling Ezekiel Sims who wants to kill her to prevent the birth of Peter Parker.
Much more believable.
Johnson further said that the film she shot was, quote, "unrecognizable," end quote, from the version of the script she signed on to make. I think everybody kind of forgot Dakota Johnson to turn on her acting button as well in this movie. Because it doesn't matter what was unrecognizable, because her as an actress was unrecognizable in this movie.
Man, like, honestly, when you look at the marketing where she's talking about the movie, that has probably been the most honest marketing I've ever seen, because that is directly what she is in this movie.
Oh, 100%.
She's just Dakota Johnson. And she's like, "I'm a paramedic, apparently."
Yeah. Last piece of information. According to producer Adam Marams, the filmmakers set the film in 2003 so that they could feature the song Toxic by Britney Spears.
Listen, it doesn't matter. Just set it whenever you want.
It doesn't really matter at all. And it's sad because Madame Web was, from what I remember from the cartoons, was a very interesting character.
Yeah.
And mind you, I know we're kind of jumping ahead of ourselves and already giving our thoughts on the film, but there's really no other way to kind of talk this through. Now, we'll do it as respectfully as possible in some form or fashion.
Some of us will try.
Some of us will try.
Some.
Spencer won't.
I will not.
I will try, but I make no promises.
But this is difficult. So as we dive into this movie, let me just say, we are going to talk about spoilers about this movie. So if you haven't seen it yet, we're saving you money.
A lot of it.
And a 2.5 hour trip. So listen here to us as we tell you about this film, because you're going to want to hear these spoilers before you go in to see the movie. So again, spoiler alert, you've been warned. Not to mention, the trailer kind of ends the way, like, gives away the ending of the movie. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, if you've watched the trailer, you've essentially seen the movie. We're not going to tell you anything you haven't seen already. So let's talk expectations. Now, there was a lot of conversation and reviews that came out as soon as the embargo dropped for this movie. And they were a mixed bag, honestly.
Mixed?
Yeah.
By whom? Crazies?
Well, obviously you have industry plants who gave, like, positive or not so much positive.
How
much
money did they get?
I don't know.
How many free snacks?
Well, see, here's the thing. Here's the thing. So I don't think you guys understand. When you get into the good graces of certain studios and they send you either invites to junkets that are fully paid for, or they send you, you know, exclusive opportunities, or they do X, Y, and Z, you do what you can to try to massage that relationship. You don't want to sully it. And so most of the time, and I'm just being honest from being my experience in the industry, you sometimes have to step aside your own feelings and thoughts so that way you can maintain visibility with the studio.
Okay, mm-hmm. So compromise your morals.
100%. Yes, exactly. Exactly. It's journalism, man. I mean, that's the nature of the news nowadays. I mean, you sidestep what you believe so that you can promote exactly what gets you paid. That's what it's all about. And mind you, not everybody's like that, thankfully. Certain people have morals. And a lot of the people that I've seen that have talked about this movie, or that have actually made efforts to make their thoughts known, have been pretty vocal about the honest truth about this movie. But there have been also some folks, like, there's a certain YouTuber, I'm not going to name him, but if you know, then you know, who has chosen to refrain from reviewing the movie because they don't want to, quote unquote, bash the film. Seeing as apparently that's the only way he could talk about the movie, but also within the mindset that he himself is trying to get a film off the ground and whatnot. And mind you, I can see both sides of that coin. Number one, as a filmmaker or as filmmakers I know, he is somebody who is trying to make sure that he doesn't burn any bridges before, you know, the opportunity comes where maybe his film might need distribution.
Mm-hmm. Well, at least I can respect that whole setup because, like, he's trying to do something and doesn't want to burn people. It's like, I'm just not going to talk about it.
But on the flip side, as a reviewer, as a critic myself, I am kind of imbued with the responsibility to give my opinion educated, not just opinionated and without discourse, like my full educated opinion on films, whether or not they are good or bad.
I feel like this person did give their opinion by saying, I'm not reviewing this.
Exactly.
Like, that is an opinion, too.
That is essentially his review. And on their review, sorry. And unfortunately, like, that's just the nature of the game. That's the nature of how you want to pitch yourself. You're either going to give your opinion and give the best way to land, like, that land this whole thing, or you're not going to say anything and move your hands out of the way and let your words just flop on the ground and just, you know, let it lie where it lie. We're going to be honest here on the review, and we're going to talk about different aspects of this film. But I don't think the aspect of ever refraining from needing to review a film would ever be something that I think we would do, unless obviously for good reasons, such as like the strikes that happened last year, that we did take a step back from more current films that were in production or current films that were in theaters. So let's talk expectations. Obviously, this is supposedly within the Spider-Verse somewhat.
Well, I mean, Spider-Verse means anything now. So.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I mean, Arachnophobia just had a blue and red spider in it the other day. And, you know, they're no, I don't know. But like the thought is that this is supposed to incorporate the Spider-Man universe, whichever one, who knows. And as people who were coming into this film, what were some of your guys' expectations based on the marketing as well as it supposedly being a part of that Peter Parker, Tom Holland universe? Let's start with Amy.
Literally, my expectations were
my gosh.
Not only coming from a comic book background and when we had the 90s Spider-Man show, which gave a lot of great prominence to who Madam Web was, my expectations were this was a trash fire from the jump. Not only because the only thing I recognizably note Dakota Johnson from is her famous mother and the fact that she was part of a franchise that was based off a Twilight fanfic that created a lot of notoriety.
You could give names to these things so that way people have an understanding.
50 Shades of Grey. There you go.
Not everybody knows that 50 Shades of Grey was based off
a Twilight fanfic. Literally, not even joking. And to be frank, I had no hopes in this and I was trying to avoid this. And the only reason I saw it, I promise, is because it was a requirement for us to watch it. And we all suffered together. So that makes me happier. Spencer, did you have any expectations of this?
So in November of 2023,
he's got a timeline here.
Watched the trailer for this movie. Ooh. And I was like, well, this is going to be stupid. And I'm not going to watch it. And then early February of this year, I started to watch the marketing coming out of this movie.
Uh-huh.
And then I got excited for the movie because I was like, this marketing is bonkers. Because I showed you two
a
clip of Raven Simone from That's So Raven doing a promo thing for this. She's not in this movie.
Nope.
And that promo had way too many confusing things on it. Like, why does she have a marketing person from Sony listed as spam likely? Oh my gosh, so many weird things about that. But like, really, the person who sold me on this movie being a huge dumpster fire was Dakota Johnson herself, because in interviews that she's been giving, like the video interviews, I'm just like, man, you are done. Like, you're so not into what's happening here. Which was funny because it was toggling back from forth of being like, you know, I really like the Marvel Universe to like, oh, I don't know any of Tom Holland's Spider-Man movies.
Oh, that's right. I forgot that they asked her to name Spider-Man movies.
Yeah, and she made up a whole bunch of answers.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, she made something, like some random names for like...
The one where he tries to go home but can't. Spider-Man, the one where he tries to go home but he can't. Like, oh my God, I forgot.
Yeah. And so like then I was like, oh, I'm interested in a trash fire. So now I would like to see this movie. It will be awful.
Eddie?
Well, as far as like any other marketing, I only saw the first two trailers, the teaser trailer and the actual official trailer. And then I heard all the rumors about the press junkets that she was doing. And the photos alone made me think, like, this woman doesn't want to be here. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what is she, why is she, you know, she, because she looks like she's an awkward person. Like, not awkward as in, like, socially awkward. Like, she chooses to be that one person who shows up to an event in, like, alligator-skinned, you know, penny loafers. And then looks at people wrong when they ask her about her shoes. Like, she seems like one of those types of people. Like, I don't feel like she really is from the marketing pictures alone, that she was really going to be invested into this character. And I did hear about that video. Mm-hmm. I didn't see it, but I heard about it because I remember someone posted like a meme on Instagram or something about like the answers that she gave. Mm-hmm. And they're like, oh, my God. And I'm like, this woman's an actress, right? Like, what if this is like the long con? What if it's like, you know, kind of like this is like Joaquin Phoenix from like...
Wait, she was doing these interviews as Sandra Webb, is what you're saying, possibly?
Yeah, or yeah, maybe like she was like actually knowing how the interviews are going to end and she just was like awkward through the whole thing. I don't know. It's hard to tell. So, first impressions. So we all saw the film together. We suffered together.
Thankfully, we were together.
And right out the gate, as soon as we left the theater, what were your first impressions? Let's start with Amy.
Oh, my God. I think that literally was... There were so many sounds coming out of my mouth as we exited. And I was so thankful we were getting out of that film. And then we stood outside the theater just like decompressing, like when it was a bad date and you just needed to tell everybody. Yeah, we got to talk more about this, Spencer.
Okay. Wow. Like, honestly, wow. Like,
I think you literally had the loudest reaction as soon as we got out. You're like, what was that?
That was... incredible, like literally incredible. I have never seen anyone who put out like, this is what we're doing. What, like, it was mind-blowing. I was mind-blowed after this movie because I could not believe they put this out.
Yeah, I have to agree. Like, this was one of those types of movies where you're watching and you're like, somebody gave a thumbs up to this. Like, someone looked at this print after all the editing, after all the color correcting, after all the color grading, after all the audio was edited, after everything was put together, someone screened this who was official and looked at the people who made the decisions and gave them a thumbs up like, yeah, good job, guys. Like, that's literally somebody's job. And they put this out thinking that people were going to look at it and say, now that right there is another Casablanca. Like, that right there, that's like one of those movies you're going to remember. Yeah, we remember it all right for it not being good.
It's a Spider-Man movie.
It's a Spider-Man.
Okay, my impression is that someone at Sony, whoever is in charge of this, is very old and does not understand what the whole deal is with the kids in the superhero movies is.
It's Hello. One of those movies with the kids and the adults that fly through the air.
Yeah, we need Spider-Man in the movie. It's like, okay.
Can we get Steel Boy? What's his name? Iron Lad? Let's bring Iron Lad.
Like, I feel like
I feel like
those are really good impressions like for both that. Of you too. I'm kind of happy about
it. But you're right. Like, it makes no sense who was at the helm of this decision-making table and was like, we're going to put the stamp of approval. And like, you know, it didn't make sense.
And I say this with full honesty. When Morbius is a cinematic masterpiece compared to this movie, you've done something so atrociously wrong, I don't even know how to help you at this point.
Yeah, we've actually, before we went on the air, we were talking about it. Spencer asked if we had seen, myself or Amy, had seen Morbius. Like, we haven't seen it. It takes a lot for a movie to actually convince me to say the words, I think I need to see Morbius. Because if this movie was worse, then Morbius can't be that bad.
Morbius is not this bad, which was crazy.
It also has Matt Smith in it, so you might have to change your opinion.
Yeah, you, I could
but
see...
But he's the bad, like, guy, so it's okay, it works.
You, I could see it like being like, no, this is worse because Matt Smith's in it.
Matt Smith is a bad guy, so it's okay.
Oh, because
he plays good villains.
Yes.
See, if there's one thing I can say Matt Smith does well, he plays bad people very well. It almost makes you think that in real life, he is a bad person, so...
Don't.
It's like, hey, what? Live your truth
there,
buddy.
So mean to everyone.
Yeah, fish sticks and custard. You do your thing, buddy.
Fish fingers
and custard.
Would you rather me say fried shrimp and jello? Is that what you want me to say? Who's eating fried the fish fingers and custard?
Matt Smith. He had to for the scene.
I'm telling you, villains adore villains. So anyway, no.
Well, I feel like you'd like Matt Smith then.
That's what I said. He's a good villain.
Oh gosh. Okay.
So back to what we were talking about.
Madam Web.
No, it's really strange that a movie like this would create the unction, if you will, of now making me feel like I need to see Morbius. If this movie, Madam Web, was worse than Morbius, how bad could Morbius be?
And it's not. But like the even like before I saw Madam Web, my impression of Morbius was like, eh. Like, and that was it. Like, it wasn't so bad I wanted to talk to. Like, because you just found out today that I watched Morbius.
Yeah.
So it wasn't bad enough.
No, you had mentioned you'd seen it a while back.
Oh, okay. Well,
or like, at least to me.
It wasn't bad enough to really talk about, you know?
Like, it didn't make you, like, jump up and shout and say, oh my God, this movie, whatever.
Yeah, I'm sure there was, like, a thing or two was said in it, but, like, nothing major that, is relevant to conversation, unlike Madam Web.
Mm. Yeah, this movie was mm-mm. Yeah, we're going to talk about this. So let's talk, the obvious elephant in the room, the acting of this film. Now, I would like for us to start on the better side of the spectrum, because we know what the worst side of the spectrum looks like. But
okay,
let's talk.
Emma Roberts or
Adam Scott.
Who do you want to talk about first?
Like, I need to say, Adam Scott is one of those actors who I didn't used to like. I wasn't a really big fan of his. I thought his humor was kind of, but mostly because I had seen him in Step Brothers, and that's kind of what I was used to. And then he showed up in Parks and Rec, and then that great video of him on Jimmy Kimmel when he talks about how he wrote a letter to Mark Hamill to come to his birthday when he was younger, and he didn't show up, but then Mark Hamill shows up with a lightsaber and Adam Scott is literally like shaking with excitement. And I'm like, oh my God, Adam Scott is a nerd like us. I will accept you, Adam Scott. Like, it made sense to kind of just jump on board and be like, Adam Scott needs our support because he's a nerd. So I look at Adam Scott and I always see like, okay, he is making, like, all of a sudden now I have this excuse to cheer for him because, hey, nerds unite. In this movie, he wasn't bad. Like, I have to say, like, he was decent. He was good for the minimal scenes that he was in. I liked him. I thought he was good. yeah.
Okay, so I'm glad you brought up that story because I did not know that story about him.
Oh, it's so great.
And
so sweet.
That, like, because I had a sneaking suspicion that I was like, he must really like Spider-Man to be in this movie.
He has to be, like, a super fan. Like, for him to do that amount of work for this film... And knowing how well or not well this film was going to do, like, he had to be a fan.
Yeah, because, like, I had a feeling that someone was like, hey, you can play Uncle Ben. And he was like, I'm into this.
Like, Uncle Ben?
I don't even care.
Yeah. He's like, this is just showing up on YouTube. I'm in. Like, he was fully engaged. Emma Roberts, she was in it.
I guess she also is a super fan.
Why would you choose to be in this movie, Emma Roberts? Like,
Emma Roberts, you're in two scenes. Why are you
because
in
you're
it?
Paid well.
Yeah, like, honestly, she was the most shocking casting in this movie. Yeah. I was like, why are you here?
Yeah, 100%. Let's talk the girls in this movie. Sydney Sweeney, Isabella Merced, and Celeste O'Connor.
One of them I actually feel very bad for.
So, uh-oh. So Isabella Merced is the Latina who is in the movie.
She's Corazon.
Yes.
That's her character's name. She plays okay. The original Araña in the comic book, so she's like...
Okay, well, you're getting way ahead of the story here. Just focus here on the acting. Anyway, Isabella Merced, who also played Dora in the Dora the Explorer movie.
That's why her in the woods is even funnier.
She was also in the one of the Transformers movies.
The Last Knight.
Yeah, it was The Last Knight, yeah. No?
Yes, was The Last Knight.
Oh, yeah, because that's the one with Anthony Hopkins. What else has she done since you have it pulled up?
I have her 100 Things to Do before high school, nope. And then Transformers Instant Family. So that was the...
That one with Mark Wahlberg.
She was in Sicario Day of the Soldado.
That's right. Day of the Soldado.
Sorry.
Did you say Soldado?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I'm not wearing my glasses. And then the titular character in Dora and the Lost City of Gold.
She did well. I thought she was really, you know, good in this role.
Mm-hmm. Oh, apparently she was in the Father of the Bride remake. Oh, girl, no.
Are you
but
done?
She is slated to be Hawk Girl in Superman Legacy for DC for James Gunn. So
okay. Isabella Merced, she was great. Sydney Sweeney, who was the blonde girl with the glasses.
Yes.
Redhead.
Oh, she was the redhead?
She's the redheaded girl with the glasses, but yes.
I thought she was blonde. See, this is how bad this movie is. I don't recall her having red hair, but...
The character that she plays is a redhead as well, so that's the only reason. But she's from Euphoria.
Yeah, she was also in a recent movie about... It was a rom-com.
Anyone But You.
Yes, which actually got a lot of heat because I believe her male co-star, who was married, ended up leaving his wife for her.
Ooh, girlfriend, no.
Celeste O'Connor, she's another one. I don't believe I've seen her in anything. I don't know.
She plays Lucky Domingo in Ghostbusters Afterlife.
So she's in the...
She's
the girl who likes...
Finn Wolfhard.
Yeah, Finn Wolfhard. Okay.
She was also in Freaky.
She'll also be in Frozen Empire when that comes out, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. She's in the trailers. The three girls did well together. I felt like they had good chemistry for them just being three teenagers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I felt like there was a lot more heart to their story just in general. Like, they felt like three individuals who had a storyline. Like, they were these three tough... Like, if you had removed Dakota Johnson from this movie, I feel like the movie would have been a lot better. Like, with the three girls, them having, like, abandonment issues of, you know, all three of them have parents who don't really spend time with them. They band together to try to... you know, keep each other company and protect each other. And like that kind of story, that would have been great. Like, throw in a couple of spiders, biting people, get powers, boom, all three of those become the main focus of the story. I'm all for it. They were great. Then, you know, we get to the other side of the, you know, the spectrum, and we get to Tahar Rahim.
Hold on. Before we even go to Ezekiel, I want to just really briefly come back to Sydney Sweeney. I saw an interview with her.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was watching this interview, she was actually genuinely excited and interested to be in this movie. Sydney Sweeney.
Okay.
And like, to the point where I felt bad for her because she had actually done research on the character she was playing and like was like, oh, like, hey, can we change these shots to do like these things? Because like the character actually does this. And like, I was like, oh no, I feel bad for you because like you're giving your A game and I don't feel like it's going to pay off.
Yeah. You're giving your A game for an F movie. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
at least she tried and she was having fun.
Yeah. That is true.
When they were together, we can say that they actually looked like they were having fun together.
They
like
were
those
like
three.
The only people having fun at this.
So Tahar Rahim, number one, I couldn't tell what his nationality was. Like,
apparently
I could.
He's French.
Was he?
Wow.
He was born in Belfort, France. Yes.
Fooled me, because his accent was all over the place.
Yes.
And it doesn't belong in your face. Sorry. Oh, Freudian slip. Apparently, his family's from Algeria, even though he was born in France.
Okay. So anyway, his acting was so weird. Like, obviously, a lot of his scenes required ADR. So
what do you mean a lot? All. It seemed like every single one.
It's true. Every single scene seemed like it required ADR, because it was weird how most of the stuff that he was talking about seemed to not correlate with his movements of his mouth.
100%.
So it was weird watching him on scene trying to be menacing when it didn't really work, which is probably why they chose to keep him in the costume as often as possible, because you didn't see his mouth move. But he was somebody who was afraid of his dreams. Like, that's ultimately what I felt like he was getting at.
And he didn't like to wear shoes.
That is true. You look perplexed, Spencer.
No, we're going to get to it later. It's fine.
And then we get to the piece de resistance, the one, the only Dakota Johnson.
I don't know why we're talking about her in the actors section, because that requires acting.
You hit the nail on the head. If I had a buzzard, I would have hit it. This woman literally acted like she did not want to be on set. Like, I feel like she didn't care if they called out action or cut. She was just her. And every single scene that she's in seems, I kid you not, and I say this with all sincerity, her acting is on the same level as Tommy Wiseau. Like, I feel like they both, tell me I'm wrong.
Harsh.
Tell me I'm wrong.
That's so harsh.
Because Tommy Wiseau actually is putting some sense of emotionality into it, even if
he's
it's fake.
He's also paying for it. Like, literally, and he is financing it so that he can do that.
However, Dakota Johnson, who is getting paid for this movie.
Standing up. Sorry.
Do you need help? Do you need somebody to pinch you or something?
Yes,
oh my
she
gosh.
Needs help. She saw Madam Web.
I can't unsee it. My eyes. I'm not blind.
I don't know what's happening here.
We're descending into madness.
So
it begins.
I don't get, like, why would you sign up to do a film and then act like you don't want to be in the film? Like, unless there's, like, some kind of obligation within her contract. Well, even Amy's putting up the money sign, but, like,
I wanted to start playing Shane McMahon's theme song.
Here comes the money. But here's the thing, though. Even if money was part of it, like, contractually, she doesn't have to do it.
Mm.
Unless there is an obligation in the contract with the studio that she has X amount of movies with the studio to do.
Well, she would have.
What studio did 50 Shades of Grey go through?
Oh, good point. Let me return back to that one. 50 Shades of Grey, the film series, was done and distributed by Universal Pictures or Universal Studios. And then it was produced, edited music. Production companies, Michael DeLuca Productions, Trigger Street, A Perfect World Pictures, distributed by Focus Feature and Universal.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, honestly, looking at her last few films, I'm not seeing anything.
She's married to the lead singer of Coldplay, so
that's no excuse. The only thing of consequence out of all the movies that I see that she's done in the last 5 years was the Peanut Butter Falcon with
Shia LaBeouf.
Outside of that, like, there's a movie called Daddy-O. I had to pull in to read that closer. Persuasion, Am I Okay?
No,
Cha-Cha Real Smooth, The Lost Daughter, The High Note, The Nowhere In. Like, what studio is producing these movies?
You know what I just found on IMDb?
What did you just find?
I found a clapboard that has a different director listed.
Wait, what?
This apparently is the action director, Darren Prescott.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
What's he done?
I am the Googles. I am the Googling.
Okay. I think he was part of Black Panther.
Stunt coordinator for Black Panther. Yeah. The Matrix stunts for Matrix Resurrection. Stunt coordinator for Baby Driver. God, John Wick Chapter 2.
Wait, Revelation or Resurrection?
Resurrections.
Well, no one's perfect.
That's true.
He was a stunt performer on True Detective. He's the stunt coordinator for the Divergent series. Most of John Wick.
You're not really helping his argument here.
He's the stunt
guy. Most of John Wick. That's
most of John Wick.
Like the John Wick like movies. It seems like he's the stunt coordinator for Moneyball. And
here's
Drive.
The thing. Here's the thing. They had a stunt coordinator or an action director or whatever. The thing is, most of those fight sequences were in CG or were heavily amplified by CG, and it just turned into a huge cartoon movie in real life.
We could have got a cartoon movie and it would have been better. And then we didn't have to see Dakota Johnson.
That's a fantastic question. Why didn't Sony Animations take over this?
Because
money.
But they would have done a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, see, the thing is, Spencer... A lot of the movies that Warner Brothers should be putting out, they aren't.
Sony. And
a lot of, oh, Sony.
See?
Oh. Well, I mean, that kind of
both,
applies
it,
them
it both,
too.
It both comes with that. But I think even with, if we're transitioning towards story, because the horse is already dead, and if we keep beating it, we'll never get anywhere. In terms of story, even as animated, this story was rough. But it would have been more cohesive as an animated picture than it would have as a live action.
This movie told me that this was going to be a dumb film the moment she got scared by a pigeon going through her window.
Not
and
when
it made
he
it
was
an iconic
movie.
It made it an iconic moment where she's staring at this pigeon on her counter and there's swells of music happening. And I'm like, this is what we're watching, folks. This is what
and
we're watching.
She changed the future.
She opened a window and changed the future.
And hope came through that window.
That's poo-poo. The dumbest. Hope came through that window. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it's either I say hope came through that window or I say, you know, he was in the Amazon with my mom when she was researching spiders right before she died.
There's not much else that you can do with that because that is to the point.
God, I hate that line.
And that's all that we've heard for the last however many months is literally about her mom, her dead mom, and the guy in Peru.
Yeah. Which even, okay, so let's kind of jump over to what is technically considered their story for this film. The explanation for why she was traveling and how everything falls out is kind of ridiculous. First off, she is traveling to the Amazon rainforest to find a spider because her daughter, which is still in her belly, apparently has a genetic disease that in the 70s you can find that your child has.
Yes, very advanced 70s stuff.
Exactly, very advanced.
So this is like disco balls, really know how to scan a baby.
In 72.
Right? Just shove it up there and just twist it about and say...
Sprinkle, sprinkles.
Let's do what the light tells us. Like, it's...
Oh no, your baby has disco fever.
Stop. I'm not going to lie, that was really
good. That was actually really good, I have to admit. Yeah, like, first off, how in the world did the 70s have this type of technology? Number two, you know, this woman shouldn't have been able to get on an airplane that far in advance in her pregnancy.
It was the 70s.
True, but even then...
I can get on a plane, I'm pregnant, you're fine.
I mean, they just stopped smoking on planes, like, slightly before that, wasn't
that? No, it was during the 70s they were still smoking.
So, in other words, oops, she could get on a plane.
I believe they had,
like,
a smoking section in the 80s. Oh. I think it was in the 90s. Who knows?
We don't know planes. We'll go ask.
And apparently neither do, you know, Sony and all them people who made this movie.
You know what else they don't know? Practical things like airbags in cars.
Yeah.
Mike Epps didn't need to go out like that.
Yeah. Apparently, part of the stipulation for this film to be made is that Mike Epps needs to die in the movie. The only black male adult in this film had to go.
Like, literally.
2003.
Too friendly.
Yeah.
Such a good leader. Like,
which,
what?
Which, by the way, had she not have stopped him to bother him about
yes,
him?
She killed him.
She killed
Thank
him.
Thank you.
She ensured he died.
Yes.
Yes.
Because she would have just shut up. Also, like, that one scene, I have no idea how these powers work now. Because, like, it makes it seem like she can see, like, the future, but, like, it seems like these powers are also, like, leading her and Ezekiel, which he might have curse powers, so that might be different, to, like to what they will do if they don't stop what they're doing.
You know what
this
is, right? This is essentially the prequel to the very first Final Destination.
They
essentially are seeing these deaths happen, and they're enacting their actions are actually setting up for these demises to occur.
Yeah.
So like the entire Fantastic Four dies on that plane in that first film, as well as like a couple other superheroes. This is a whole separate universe solely based on Madame Web.
So she is the death design.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, Tony Todd talks about her all the time, like death, everything. It's just this movie doesn't make sense.
No.
And it is set in 2003. I obviously, apparently she can roll around in a stolen taxi.
Nobody
to an airport
her.
Where she can get on an airplane to fly to the Amazon rainforest.
In 2003.
2 years after 9/11.
You know,
well,
and
you
she's
know how
haunted.
Lax security was. Like,
oh, absolutely.
9/11.
I mean, absolutely.
Crossing borders? What?
Yeah.
You know, you there wasn't like beefed up security or anything at the airports.
There
Why
wasn't
would there
a
be?
Bolo out for you, lady. Like, whatever. You can get to Peru and then you can get on a bus and you're the only white woman on there and nobody's going to try to accost you or take your stuff. Then you can walk around the jungle and not be like bugged at all. But you can find exactly where your mother might have been by a picture of a tree. With no coordinates, you just ride that bus straight into the Peruvian rainforest. And if you happen upon, you won't just happen upon that tree. You know where
well,
that tree is.
Well, that photo probably had like GPS in it.
Oh yeah, it had tracking on. It had tracking on the back.
It was the scent of the tree, and she just followed her nose. Like, yeah. Oy, oy.
This movie has no story.
You're thinking what? About tree smells?
No, now I'm thinking that doesn't even make sense why she had that photo.
Exactly.
Her mom died in the Amazon while she was researching spiders.
Exactly.
So who developed that?
All of this stuff doesn't make... How did she get to the U.S. initially?
Yes.
Like, did they swing across the ocean and drop her off at someone's doorstep? Like, I don't understand how she got to the U.S. I don't understand where all the belongings came from. You would have figured Ezekiel would have came back...
Everybody, he murdered everybody at the camp anyway.
Well, and you would have
had the spider.
Well, and you would have figured, like, after her body was gone, Ezekiel would have came back and stolen all the materials
and
research.
The research, yeah.
Well, apparently he had what he wanted and to, you know, do his thing. Which, question, what is he, what are his motives? Because honestly, I don't know what he's doing. Because Ezekiel himself, I don't understand in the slightest. He has a Spider-Man outfit.
A kit very close to Spider-Man as he can get.
Why? Because that just sets up a new problem for future Peter Parker.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, if he wears a Spider-Man outfit, people are going to be like, oh, he's like that guy from, like, 2003 who was going around and getting hit by a bunch of cars.
Like, yeah, like looking at him and be like, oh, it's the bad guy. He's back.
Yeah.
Let's shoot him. Like that kind of thing. Like I figure like that would have been like New York's initial response. Like, oh, no, it's that guy who tried to kill those three girls that did the thing. Let's kill him. Like, God, like it, I don't know. Gabagool. I don't know how it goes. But
Gabagool that?
It doesn't make sense. And I don't know what they're trying to set up. Like this movie doesn't set up anything of consequence within the whole Sony Spider-Man universe or the Marvel Spider-Man universe.
Well, part of the problem is the director. I remember hearing a quote from the director about why she didn't really set up the three young ladies and what their deal was, is that she didn't feel like it was fair to have like four origins in one movie, which would have been overstuffed, but then you run into the new problem of I don't know really what's going on with these
See,
people.
And this goes back to the DC problem. Where
the original DC problem
with the films, not the newer take. We haven't had a chance to kind of look at that yet. But like the original DC problem is that they were introducing storylines and characters and elements that was beyond where the fan base was at currently in the cinematic universe. So you get to the point where you're like, now the only people who can appreciate it are the quote unquote hardcore DC fans who can recognize a still from this, you know, particular scene in the film and correlate it to this panel from this comic book of obscurity and get all their jollies out because of that. Like, now we're getting into the weeds like that for this, where you have three spider-esque characters who apparently in the future hold a certain role or title within the Spider-Man comic universe. Mm-hmm. And the only even inkling of a character that people can recognize is Madame Web, mainly because of her appearance in the Spider-Man animated series, which she is only in the very last few episodes. She's not in the whole series. She's only in the last few episodes of the entire series.
The Sins of the Father arc, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like she's in that. And then Amy, why don't you give them the lowdown of where Madame Web actually originates in the comic books? Because I know you did your wiki notes.
My wiki notes. Push up my glasses. So Madame Web originally showed up, I believe, in the 80s. I'm going to say 80s. And at this point, she is an old lady who has a debilitating disease. She is a mutant. Hold up. She's a mutant. And she's essentially attached to life support that looks akin to a spider web. And she's kind of like Professor X, but not really. So they kind of tried to decide that she's clairvoyant, she can see the future, and she helps at random times. But the thing that comes into it a lot is the fact that she's like super old and frail. And I say super old, but she's like in her 50s, so I feel bad. But she's frail. She literally dies a whole bunch of time and gives her powers to other people. So like, the characters that we see in the movie, the other girls, two of them become Madame Webbs.
Oh.
Like later down the line. And then two of them, or three of them, become Spider Women. And then it like.
Spider Woman.
Well, Spider Woman. But they're.
They take on the mantle of Spider Woman.
Yes. Thank you. But so. You're welcome. But so we're like.
And I didn't have to push on my glasses for that.
No, you didn't. But so there's a hard diversion because really we don't get a backstory for Madame Web. Mm. She is important, but she is a minor character in everything. And really when we do see her, as Eddie said, is in the cartoon where there's a story arc called The Sins of Our Father. And she's part of a cosmic, no joke, cosmic essentially like trial or test board. And she's testing Spider-Men from different universes to see if they will be able to defeat Spider-Carnage. And she tests Peter Parker. And she's there for a little bit. She tests him. And then she lets him go. And he's like, please don't come back until you're ready to give me my final test. She's like, okay, cool. And she doesn't show back up for like a long time. But literally, she dies like all the time. And we're like, okay. Like, she's more mutant than anything. And this was just like, I'm a paramedic and I know Ben Parker. And I'm like, and what? And you might be fostering J. Jonah Jameson's niece? Like, and you're doing what with these other characters? Like, you're denying them the opportunity for a backstory and an origin where they can actually be productive members of the Spider universe? Like,
No, I think that summarizes it pretty well, because the trajectory for these characters in this film is absolutely not cohesive, and they're essentially kidnapped for real, because the fact that she doesn't return them to their families legally, they still belong to their families. She is kidnapping them. So I don't know what the steps were taken to, you know, keep the three girls within her apartment, but that's at the end of the movie. It's just really awkward and it doesn't make sense. Like, why? And how does a firework cause paralysis? Like, there's a lot of questions.
Not just paralysis, the blinding, which was the sexy blinding, which we talked about, and I'll go into that. But then you also have a villain who is more of a villain in relation to Peter Parker than he is to anybody else, because Ezekiel Sims got bit a kin like Spider, like Peter. That's how he got his powers. And he's like a ruthless businessman. So instead of being a hero, he decides to like use his powers for evil. Makes sense. Then he also starts to believe this weird kind of thing that every person that has been imbued with powers is receiving these powers from these animals, animal totems. So he in his mind, he paralleled Peter getting bit by the spider as the spider trying to pass on the totem or the essence, the power of the spider to Peter before it was before the radiation killed it. And now he's part of some supernatural food chain and other like creature totems are supposed to eat him. So there's somebody that's supposed to come along and kill Peter Parker because he's a spider and he's small. Like, and then it ties into Kraven that way. But this is literally like, hi, I'm a maybe scary guy that stole this spider and I walk around New York barefoot. I'm scary. And you're like, why?
Mm.
What? The fireworks were scarier.
Yeah, when she got hit by the firework at the end, I was like, oh, so she lost an eye. And so when she showed up with just total blind and like paralysis, I was like, I don't think that's what would have happened.
that's not how any of this works.
I'm not a doctor, but I'm willing to take a bet on that.
I mean, if you're taking an explosive that still burns hot underwater and it speeds across your eyes, I'm pretty sure there would be more burning and damage to the outside as well as the inside of your eyes than what we saw. Yeah.
She had sexy starbursts around the edges of her eyes like somebody tried to make her one of those cheetahs for Halloween but didn't know how to do it. The CPR. Oh.
So let's talk about the CPR. So this movie, ultimately, if you remove the Madame Web spider power aspect of this movie, it's essentially a movie about three parentless teenagers being pursued by a killer whom is taken in by a paramedic who teaches them on an off chance how to do CPR properly, where the CPR then comes back at the end to kind of wrap the whole story up in a nice circle.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about the other CPR incident.
The one outside the fireworks before the fireworks started?
Yeah, that one. Okay, so like there's this big accident at the same fireworks factory days prior. Where they lose Mike Epps. And like she's doing CPR on this guy, right?
And you think he's dying because she's just like,
she's just going. I'm like, oh, well, she's going to call this soon. But then she needs to go somewhere else. And like, she just looks down. She's like, sir, you're fine. He's just like, okay. And like, someone else comes and gets him. I'm like, that is specifically not how CPR works.
This movie has very little like consideration for human life, for regular life. Mm-hmm. Because even at the beginning of this movie, once after we get the whole, her mom dies and she's born and whatnot, like we get a scene where she is driving recklessly the ambulance
and she's driving
and Adam Scott, Ben Parker in the back is like, she's going into defib. I have to, you know, whatever. Like apparently this woman in the back of the ambulance is dying and she goes, oh, what? You can't handle it. Like she says something off remark. I'm like, hey, she is dying in the back of your ambulance. What is your deal? This movie doesn't make sense.
Like, if at the end of the movie there was a twist where Dakota Johnson was actually some sort of scam artist who just took over Cassie Webb's life and just was trying to pretend to be like her, I would have been like, that's at least more believable. Because, like, she's so bad at her job that there's no way that she would have actually been, like, you know, helpful.
And then the other thing is, like, when we cut to footage of her driving the ambulance, she's like, literally it's the two hands just kind of like do driving versus, and then suddenly that's like hard turn and you're like, what are you even driving?
Yeah,
like
it's like driving the same steering wheel that the Wheels on the Bus song drives, so it's like the Wheels on the Bus, like it just
you want to know what's super confusing about that though is that she had stunt training to drive cars.
Seriously?
I saw a video of her doing it, like, and she did a good job. video. And I'm like,
oh, no.
What?
No, thank you. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. This movie is bonkers. Let's talk highlights or issues. Now, I know.
Issues.
I know that we have
what
a ton
highlights?
Of, I know we have a ton of issues. So let's, if it's something that we haven't stated already at this point, let's keep it to one or two, Amy. So let's start with you. Wow. Don't leave us in suspense.
Okay. Because I have to
She's
think
literally
of, no,
going
because
quiet
I have,
on air.
I have to think of the ones that I already haven't mentioned in the course of this, which were still issues. So first, the first one that I haven't
Remember,
talked
you only
about,
have two.
Exactly. So EMS is trained to deliver babies. And Ben Parker is a both EMTs and paramedics. And he is trained to deliver a baby. So when Mary Parker, her water breaks and she starts going into labor at the house, he could have stabilized and provided support until the ambulance got there. And our three spider girls, who have apparently been hiding out for weeks on end and nobody saw them in 2003 anywhere, they all decide to jump into a car and take, you know, the really pregnant woman in labor to the hospital. No, ding dong. You could have waited. So that's my first issue. Second issue, and I know when I said that in the theater, it was much more hilarious for Spencer because I turned and looked at Spencer and was like, he can deliver the baby. I lost my mind. And then
Are you struggling with words or like what is happening here?
I am so frustrated at just the general sense in this movie of being like, we should care, but we shouldn't care. And I found my other one. The assistant hacker. I'm sorry, Spence. You can piggyback all day on this. The assistant hacker for Ezekiel Sims. I assume her name is Amari. I don't know. I don't know who the heck she is.
Yeah.
I don't know why I should care about her. I don't know why she's like, yes, I'm going to do whatever you want, Mr. Sims. And she's like sitting there with access to the NSA, like to all of their cameras and everything. Like, you think the NSA would have noticed that one of their people is completely missing?
And 4 weeks!
Exactly! Go!
Okay. All right. So first off, here's the thing. I have no idea what the time frame of this movie is. Because if they come out and said 3 days, I'd be like, sure, fine. I believe you thought that that could have happened in 3 days. And if they said 4 months, like, equal. Both answers are valid. So, like, time is meaningless. But, like, really, just I think the thing I want to really point out is this thing I keep, like, forgetting in my head. What was it?
I'm sorry. No, it's happening to you, too, because there's so many bad things.
There's so many bad things in this movie that it's really hard to just pinpoint one. Eddie, why don't you go on?
By the way, the woman who played Amaria is also Crimp in Trolls Band Together. One of the... she's the assistant.
She's the one that I actually like.
Yeah.
Okay. If there's a character, I'll show you a picture of that.
Okay, so Cassandra Webb, the character herself, or whatever like slimness that Dakota Johnson put in, is so unlikable that I can't really believe anyone would want to hang out with her.
Ooh.
I have to agree.
Because that because like she is in places and just has like kind of an unpleasant attitude, and I'm like, these people can't possibly actually think you're friends. I could see Ben Parker being so nice that he's like, oh yeah, I'll just kind of like hang out with you, but like that's not gonna fly with everyone else in the cast.
No, I agree.
So that was really confusing. And then I guess the other thing I would like to also point out is just the Madam Web powers. I don't understand how her powers work at all. Because, like, the movie seems to want to play fast and loose with. Sometimes it makes sense where, like, you know, she's at the party, things like loop and loop. But then, like, it, like, at the end of the movie, she's just telling people, like, oh, bless you before you even done it.
Yeah.
Like, that just feeds back into the whole thing of, like, I don't see why these people are talking to her. Also, that apartment. the apartment. Can we just talk about that for like a few seconds?
Which one? The final apartment?
The final apartment.
You mean your Doctor Strange-esque final apartment?
Yes, the Doctor Strange-esque one. First off, we need to fire whoever put her in those glasses. They were awful. They were simply
so
awful.
So terrible, but so hilarious.
I don't normally care about this kind of stuff. But those glasses, the second I saw them, I was like, someone needed to rip them off her face and just throw them away and be like, you're fine without them. But like anyone's right. Like the setup of whatever is happening in that apartment, zero sense.
Yeah.
I don't know if like, because the girls, like those young ladies don't look like they haven't aged. So I can imagine they're still teenagers that just hang out with Madam Web, I guess.
Question mark? Like, again, it's so confusing.
Yeah.
And I don't understand how she's in a wheelchair at this point. Because it seems like, I feel like that's not what would have happened. But yeah.
Yeah, this whole, God.
What about you, Ed?
Okay, so my first gripe with the movie is, this should be called, much like Mac and Me is essentially Coca-Cola the movie or McDonald's the movie, this is Pepsi the movie. Because there's so much product placement in this movie that they even kill their main character with Pepsi.
It's a giant pee, baby.
That doesn't sound right at all.
It didn't look right when it was falling from the ceiling.
Either. You're the one who's still looking at it. So either way. So that just really kind of irked me. It's like, okay, I get it. You're sponsored by Pepsi. We get it. We don't need, which, why is there a Pepsi company building filled with fireworks? Is anybody asked the right questions?
Explosive taste?
Okay, stop.
No, just stop. Just stop.
I couldn't stop once I saw her crack open that Mountain Dew Pitch Black. Come on. With the label out.
Anyway, Spencer,
those
were saying,
labels were out. Like, I feel like they just saturated everyone else in the frame and just boosted the can only just that it was just...
It's just a little vignette of the can or the bottle just really close.
But I feel like that's what they actually did for some of those things.
100%. 100%.
But, like, the other thing was, like, you know, a movie is confusing because, like, I did not even notice that was a Pepsi sign. I was just so confused.
Yeah. Well, apparently Amy just only saw the P. So it is what it is.
There was an S too, but it just was like, it was hanging off.
A P and S? Yeah. So,
he did it.
No, you did it. That was frustrating as all, because it's like, okay, I get it. Like one is good. Like, or maybe two, okay. But like if you're doing it constantly throughout the whole movie, what's the point? We get it. You were paid off by Pepsi. My other gripe was, how convenient was that guy waiting for her in the rainforest? And then the weird way, which, number one, they jumped like crazy from tree to tree to get the woman who was, you know, dying, the mom, to get to that special place where they got her, where that water was at. It seemed like it was just like a short walk away, because I don't think Dakota Johnson would have walked very far or would have ran.
Yeah.
So like, I'm like, what was all that? Like, so did you guys
circling?
Yeah, they were just jumping around. Like, look at this, I could do this. Look at me. Like, okay. But the amount of like information that was dumped in that scene. What is the word? Exposition. The exposition dump in that particular scene was so bonkers. Like, apparently he pushes her soul into the water.
Doctor Strange.
They better not make like some kind of correlation with that. And then number two, like, apparently she can talk to her mom after she gets the lowdown of like, why were you in the Amazon when you were pregnant with me? I was so mad at you. Like, When were you mad? Like, at what point in time did you say that you were really mad at your mom? Because
her attitude was her being
no. Her attitude was that she was mad at whoever put her on this planet. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. Those two scenes where he meets her in the middle of nowhere, and then where they suddenly appear in the exposition dump, is just like, who like had to pigeonhole this in there so that people can be like, you know what needs to go here? Explanation of the actual disease that Madame Web has and how this is what was inflicting Cassandra before she was ever born with the technology that we don't have in the 1970s to be able to determine this until after you're born. It was a whole bunch of hot mess stuff.
I would also like to bring back up the favorite of this episode for me is the powers don't make sense. Because like he just does that and I'm like, okay, I guess this is a thing the spider people can do. But yeah. Then you're like, okay, so she's talking to her mom. Is this like a hallucination type thing for her? Yeah. Or is this actually happening? Mm-hmm. Very confusing. Mm-hmm. And then when her powers evolve at the end and she can be in multiple places at one time, what? Like, how does clairvoyance equal splitting yourself into multiple places at one time?
So the other thing that the comic books establish is she's not just clairvoyant. She's precognitive. And she's telepathic. So essentially...
Oh!
Yeah.
Well, that wouldn't be helpful!
That would have been greatly helpful, right? And that stuff because she's a mutant. Not Spider did this. Mm-hmm. Mutant power. Mutant. They call her Madame Web because of her life support around her body that looks like a web. And her name is Cassandra Web. That's why they call her Madame Web. There is no like she was bitten by a radioactive spider and now she's got precognitive powers. No, none of that. And this is just like, do you know what your spider can do for you today? Like, no, stop it.
Well, that makes more sense on why Ezekiel does not have a similar power set since they were bitten by like similar spiders.
Well, and also he's cray cray.
Yeah,
he is. So let's go ahead and get to the roundtable question for this conversation. So, obviously, this movie doesn't make a lot of sense as a Spider-Man universe movie. So give your best interpretation of what this film was supposed to be instead of a Spider-Man universe film.
Okay, so your question is unanswerable. And here's why. You mentioned it at the beginning of this episode when there was a Terminator knockoff. Mm-hmm. I never would have guessed that.
I don't think any of us would have.
Yeah, that sounds insane in itself. So like... When your possible range is Terminator or this movie, that is too wide for me to narrow down what your even intent was, which is terrible to say because you have made such a bad movie that I can't even understand what you wanted to do.
So here's what I'm proposing.
Yes.
Remove the Spider-Man universe aspect out of this film.
Uh-huh.
And what is your interpretation of this film?
Terrible.
In terms of like the story.
Sorry.
I'm sorry. What I would do is I just rewrite it. Just take Cassandra Webb out of the movie.
Okay.
And then you start with the girls, right? And then you can like make this their origin story as they come into a thing. And then like, you know, you can do it like a flash forward if you want to a different Madame Webb who actually makes sense.
What about you, Ames?
No, that's pretty on point. In saying that it was supposed to be Terminator, or at least even
a Terminator-esque version.
Well, it could have also been Days of Future Past. It could have also been X-Men Apocalypse. Yeah. Was it X-Men Apocalypse or X-Men Age of Ultron?
What are you talking about? There is no X-Men X-Men Age of Ultron.
My brain, this is where my brain has gone to that I'm this bad. It should be Age of Ultron. X-Men Age of Ultron is how we do this now. No, the one where they send Wolverine back.
Days of Future Past.
Yes. So I was right the first time.
Yes.
And now I went left field. If it had been akin to that, we could have gotten away with it. But then you would have had space for exposition on the girls each having their power, why they were sent back, who they are. They could have built that kind of around that. Even Ezekiel could be like, you know, Biff. He's doing the Biff in this. The problem is that in trying to create an origin story for a character that did not have and or need an origin story, they are pigeonholing characters into everybody's, like, into the zeitgeist that all it does is, and this is the proper use of this term, bastardizing the actual, like, the actual information and the original content. So, like, when we look at this story, I would have preferred to be like, time traveling shenanigans, let's go. Because then it would have driven people to actually look at what Madame Web did in the comics and why it shouldn't be young 30-something Dakota Johnson in a wheelie chair with bad glasses.
She's right. Yeah, I was going in a way different direction than where this conversation is going. It's fine. Yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like this movie, minus Dakota Johnson, minus the jumping of, like, interpretation of, like, clairvoyant scenes, ultimately creating a teenage kind of empowerment story for the origin of these three particular characters, where we actually get a chance to see even beginning stages of their suits, that would have been the best way to go. And remove Ezekiel Sims. He's an idiot. Like, there's no point in having him in the movie. Like, if you want to create somebody who is, you know, probably going to be a bad guy or something, like, maybe incorporate Norman Osborn or something that's more iconic and grounded in the Spider-Man lore than anything else.
I mean, that's the reason that Anya Corazon even gets her powers, is because she sneaks in to an, it's either her or it's Maddie Franklin. Basically, somebody sneaks in and goes to an Oscorp meeting in place of their dad. Yeah, it's got to be Maddie Franklin. And she's injected with the spider venom that gives her the superpowers. Mm. So you're like, there's your tie-in. Yeah. Bring it to the Raimi-verse, people.
I was going to say, on the flip side of this, I was going to say that remove every Spider-Man aspect about this movie, and it's essentially a prequel to how Nicolas Cage in the movie Next gets his powers.
Dang it, I forgot all about all that, because, like, I was thinking that directly in the movie. I was like, you guys are just having a Next battle.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Just Nicolas Cage this bad boy, and then have him wake up and, like, oh, wait, we're 15 days in the past already, you know, blah, blah, blah. So wrapping this whole thing up, let's go around and go around the table and talk about whether or not the film passes or fails and how many monocles. Let's start with Amelia.
Oh, if you thought this thing was passing, you are wrong. I'm going to quote somebody real quick to start this off, this, you know, voting off from Reddit. So this is how deep I've driven. Thank you, Bauer Meister. Congratulations to Pepsi Cola for being the strongest member of the Spider Squad. Yum. Delicious Pepsi. This film doesn't pass. This film hurts my heart in more ways than is necessary and more ways that I thought I didn't need anymore to experience in this time, lifetime, or any other one. For everyone that genuinely did try, I appreciate your thoroughness between your very questionable leadership and the studio that thought making you look like fools for being earnest was something that was going to rake in the dough. Shame. Shame on them. And I hope the best for you, except for Dakota Johnson. Mm-hmm. Girl, I don't know how to help you. I can't. And I can't pretend that I would try at this junction. But if I see you on the street, I'll at least be polite and smile and wave. I'm giving this a 0.5 monocles. I could give it a zero, but the 0.5 Pepsi Cola. Yum. Delicious.
Nice. Spencer.
As you're drinking your Pepsi.
I'm drinking my cheers.
Sponsored by Pepsi.
Hey, zero sugar.
Spencer.
No. Just no. Absolutely not. This movie fails, like it's shocking how many levels it really fails on. Just acting wise, except for the people who tried, we give you a pass. Really, I'm mostly just talking to our mains. I'm talking to Dakota Johnson and to the guy who plays Ezekiel Sims, because both of them just kind of, like, got into this, like, circle of a not act off. But, like, at least I'll give
a circle of a
not act off.
We're like, at least I'll give the Ezekiel character, like,
Tahar Rahim.
Yeah, Tahar Rahim. I'll give him, like, something, because, like, at least he looked like he was trying to be menacing. But, like, that ADR did no good. Mm-hmm. Like, I honestly want to know why that was chosen, because
it sounds like The Room. It literally sounds like scenes from The Room.
Yeah. So acting was bad. The story didn't make any sense. And especially since it seems like it was just like, you know, this went badly, so we need to cut and paste and try to make it work. Like, that's never fun to really watch.
No.
So, like, just as a cohesion, it's just a no. It doesn't work at all on any level. For monocles, like, you know, A 0.5 sounds pretty nice. I don't want to like shame some of the younger actors from trying again.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, you can have like a good career even though you're in that Madam Web.
Yeah.
So like, you know, I'm really hoping that they aren't discouraged and like continue to act, because I think some of them were actually quite good. And really, that's all I think there is to say.
I'm going to start this review, or this my grading, with a quote from the film that I think highly encapsulates the feelings about where this film's trajectory was going.
Is this having to do with someone's mother being in the Amazon while researching spiders?
No, God, no.
Okay, good. It's
the line that one actor legend, Dakota Johnson, says when she says, "How would you know you can climb a wall if you've never tried?" And I feel like this movie saw the Spider-Man franchise and said, "How would you know you can climb a wall if you never tried?" And this is them not trying. So this movie fails for me. The story does not have any kind of cohesiveness. It doesn't carry any fluidity to the story. It doesn't even carry a sense of ownership to the story's overall source material, because it's literally just winging it. Like, out of left field, it is completely winging it. And it's obvious, sadly. Like, if there's ever a film that shows that it's not caring, or that its actors don't care about where the source material comes from, or that they do any work for, you know, research, not all of them, but the main leading cast.
Yeah.
Or at least the main leading actress, the title character.
The title actress, yeah.
That says something already right out the gate for your film. Like, that says a lot. And you should have been mindful right from the jump on that notion, Sony. So shame on you. All the negativity you are getting, it is very much well deserved, because of the fact that you are bastardizing the great cinematic universe of Spider-Man, and ultimately just trying to make a buck off of any character that you think seems slightly interesting or might be fitting a current trend at the time. So with that said, I am going to give this film as well a 0.5 as well for the film, mainly for the three young women who absolutely do a phenomenal job of trying, actually putting work into their roles. Sydney Sweeney, who apparently actually does know martial arts, a lot of the young girls who look like they could have carried the movie without Dakota Johnson. And that's saying a lot, that Dakota Johnson is the actress she is. You know what? You just needed to go. So, yeah.
Yeah.
But I give it a 0.5, and I hope this movie continues to fail. So, but that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can check us out over on our website at filmlosophers.com. There we have allegedly over 300 episodes, everything from action, anime, comedy, suspense, thrillers, Marvel films, DC films, good films, bad films. If you're looking for it, we got it. Head on over to our website at filmlosophers.com. You can also check us out wherever podcasts are streaming, and that's iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Audio Boom, Spotify, Pandora, TuneIn, or iHeart. You can tune into your heart's desire on any one of those platforms. Listen in, give us a follow or subscribe at The Film Losphers, and let us know what you're listening to. If you like the movie, let us know.
And just, also, why?
Why? Exactly.
We'd really like to know why.
Or if you just like to say hi, drop us a line in the comment section below, as well as give us a 5-star review, because we have earned it.
We have.
You heard this. We need it.
I don't know if we need it.
I need it as a salve for my soul.
I don't know, Spencer. You can also check us out on the socials over at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101. Also at threads at filmlosophy101, not something something. But over on Instagram, you can catch all of our great extra content, such as Spencer's Big Score and Amy's Jane on Scene, which can be found where?
The only place it's ever lived, which is on Instagram, and Instagram only at Jane Unseen. And boy, the unseen that I did just see the other day. It's got Spencer excited for part 2. So,
yes.
Yep. Woo.
Which you're probably going to have to do that one soon before you forget it.
Yep.
So.
Well, I can't forget it. It's good. Scary.
It haunts her dreams.
It haunts my dreams.
Yeah, so check out all of our great content there. This was an interesting conversation, and we're hoping that Sony continues to move in a better direction, but who knows? So we'll leave it there. But again, that wraps up another episode. So thank you for listening, and from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Intern Amy.
Class dismissed.